And hello, people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, a moment where we can sit down, hang out, chit-chat, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, and see if we can't take those ideas for ourselves and go out and get the conversation started with friends, family, the people we meet on the street, or maybe we just get those gears turning within our own heads and see where it takes us. So I question if I should tell you if this is a secondary recording, made it only a handful of minutes into my previous one, and just do not approve. But I should also say I am not fully prepared. Life has been focused on other things, as it goes. But at the same time, I've been consuming a book. And to start off today's conversation, I'd like to question whether consuming a book via audio is considered reading. And to a lot of it, I would believe so. I can't give more attention to a piece of paper and words on it as much as I would like to. I can't put that much attention. But if I can do other things and I'm still able to consume the book, is it reading? Now, in the terms of the verb, probably not. But the information is brought into my head, and reading is the easiest go-to word. But we should probably start trying to focus on consuming. We're finding another better word because I don't like listening, even though that's listening and hearing. There's a conversation. Listening is just letting the sounds come to you, and hearing is taking the moment to understand and comprehend what sounds are coming towards you. Rant over. The book I've been consuming, which has been a fascinating read, is titled Tombstone, The Great Chinese Famine, 1958 to 1962. This book was recommended to me by a friend of mine. Goes by the name Gummy Nerds. Thank you, sir, for pointing me towards this book. It's been a fascinating read. Again, as the title says, it's about the Great Chinese Famine, something that I learned very little about in my public school years from the 90s into the 2000s. And it seems like it should be at least a discussion point. Now, I'm not saying I completely missed out, or it's possible that someone mentioned it somewhere in school. Learned a lot about the Holocaust and the systematic extermination of 6 million Jews. There was a little bit of talk about Soviet Russia and what they did to prisoners. That education had to be fulfilled through the book The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, which was also a very good read. And I recommend that people read it, but if you read it, make sure you have lighthearted material to go with it. The stories in there are very dark. The stories that are recited in Tombstone, written by Yang Ji Shang, are not uplifting either. There's a lot of stories of peasants, the lowest class of society, being disregarded and stepped on and smothered, both under fear and pride. There is a level of terrifying, but I can't comprehend the thought to the fullest, because I don't consider myself a peasant. But I can understand the cost of human life in what happened. Rules and diktats in a governmental society where the person above you is almost godlike, almost, in the grand scheme of things. They choose your fate. And there was a lot of propaganda going around that anybody who was questioning what the party thought was a far-right deviationist, trying to undermine the greater good. China at this time was all farmers. I don't have numbers. This is one of the problems with consuming a book via audio. Is when I want to go back and cite things, I either have to make sure I can pull audio, which is a chore on its own, or if I had a book, I'd be able to notate it with pen and paper. All I would have to do is recite it from the pages. But we'll paint with a broad brush, and we'll say 90% of China was agriculture. And in an attempt to make a great leap forward, They pulled people from the farms and offered them fantastic jobs in the manufacturing sector. It's the 1960s, after all. Where was America and technology at that point in time? So China was going to catch up really fast. So they brought everybody to the cities. You have to feed all the cities because nobody has room to farm. So you have to make sure that the farmers can farm, or at least make sure that they're producing food. And so they had to be able to produce enough food for the cities at the same time while everybody was rationing. In the cities, they had communal kitchens, and out in the country, they had communal kitchens. Just show them your coupon that says you're allowed one meal at this point in time and day. They'd feed you a bowl of food. If you knew the right places, and especially if you knew the right people, you could get an extra plate of food. Not necessarily just for a coupon. Because food was plentiful. Everything was happening. Everything was going all at once. And it was successful because there was a back store of food. And then some scientists came along and said, we're doing so well, we need to actually increase the amount of food so we can feed more workers, so we can catch up to the United States. We're going to surpass Britain in 5 years. We'll surpass Russia in 10, and we'll be on par with the United States in 15. It was their goal, which would put them about 1975 for what they were attempting to achieve. But in this society, there was always an attempt to do better, to pull something straight from North Korea. With the death of Kim Jong-un, if the person didn't cry harder than the person next to them, it was considered that they didn't care for the supreme leader. And when you think about it, not just for a leader, but for the party, something greater than yourself. If you don't cry harder than the person standing next to you, are you really caring about the party? So a sense of pride came in, and all of these people wanted to prove that they were doing the best in the party, or at least in their area. And so when food would come in, they brought in 1,000 kilograms. They'd say they'd brought in 1,200 kilograms, just a little bit. But not to be upstaged by their neighbor, other people would say, I brought in 1,250, 1,275, 1,300 kilograms. And so the upper state would sit there and go, fantastic, this is going great. And so next year, I want you to bring in an extra 200 on top of what you're bringing in right now. So if you're bringing in that 1,200, now you have to bring in 1,400, even though you only brought in 1,000 kilograms. You now have to bring in an additional 400. The lies kind of spiral out of control. But you can't do anything less because the party says that if you're not doing things how we're commanding, you might be a far-right deviationist, be subject to struggle. But also with the aforementioned 1,200 kilograms, the higher-ups would say, cool, you get to keep your 1,000 or 1,000, but you'd still send the government their 200 or however the numbers break down. And you get to distribute instead of 10 kilograms per peasant, you can distribute 12 because everybody has all this extra food. But again, the lies start to spiral. Peasants are merely just peasants, so you don't have to give them the extras anyways. And then you have some science mathematician individual come in and say, we can be more efficient with the planting, come through and tell all the cadres. In Soviet Russia, we would refer to them as comrades, but in China, they're cadres, members of the family. And so they would follow the rules, these mathematicians saying the plants need to all face northeast because this is the most efficient way. They need to be spaced 5 inches apart. China doing its own research, not necessarily listening to anything else that was out and available, but access to information was a little bit different back then. But the numbers that were stated went. One absurd example is someone said all of the ground needs to be tilled to 1 meter deep, 3 feet deep. And so you're bringing up undeveloped soil and knocking the healthy, good soil underneath, exacerbating a bad idea. And so all the plants failed and died, and starvation kicked in. Now, between the years of 1958 and 1962, it's estimated, because the Chinese government had the documents destroyed back in the day, they wouldn't want to be accused of so many, but it's estimated that 36 million individuals starved to death, excess deaths, people that died that should not have died. You have your regular births, you have your regular deaths. There's a certain number of people that usually die per year. And again, estimated 36 million, 1958 to 1962. When the body starts to starve itself, it aims for survival of itself. And procreation is one of the things that fails in starvation, as far as what the body is going to choose to attempt to survive, attempt to pull through. And I'm not repeating any of the stories, but there's definitely some cringeworthy situations that happen. Not pleasant. And so with this, excess deaths due to starvation, these people were also not procreating. It's not a situation of outright dying, immediately dying, where there's at least a chance of you being able to have produced offspring at some point. These people went on for years, becoming emaciated, becoming unable to consume enough calories, working extra hard, because that's what you did. You're going to beat the UK. You're going to beat Russia, Soviet Russia. You're going to become on par with the United States. 15 years. You don't procreate. And one of the extra numbers that gets thrown in here makes this book kind of scary, unwieldy, is a number of 74 million of excess deaths plus unborn children. 18 million people do not exist on this planet due to a level of greed and self-preservation, due to a level of some people who know best but really don't know best. It's terrifying to see what can happen under just a solo rule, more or less. It's not that Chairman Mao was able to be unseated, but due to the way the party worked, he was unable to be unseated. Still terrifying to think about stuff like that. And it's not to make this a downer podcast in the grand scheme of what can happen. I think we should remember that it did happen. As messed up and as messy as our democratic society is here in the United States, our democratic republic, we're not a democracy, we're a democratic republic. We have a system of checks and balances. We have the ability to fix things, correct our errors, question individuals. Holding them to an account seems to be a difficult ordeal on either side of the spectrum that we so choose to be put on and prefer the side of following the rules. We got a few of them laid out. Let's follow them. But how we choose to interpret them, it's where things kind of break down on some levels. But I guess I more want us to, again, as we remember this, just I think back again that I don't recall hearing much about a Chinese famine. Not a lot of waves. Not a lot of understanding on how it broke down. Kind of like how I again had to learn about the Soviet Union, what necessarily happened within it, until I read The Gulag Archipelago. But I guess the book Tombstone didn't come out until 2008, so I was out of school by then. So I guess I have an excuse. But again, talking points, ideas, something to get the juices flowing, something maybe you become interested enough to go out, pick up this book. Tombstone, The Great Chinese Famine, 1958 to 1962 by Yang Jishang. I'll have a link for that in the show notes. And I've been Billy Bones. BILLYBON, the number 3S. You find me on Twitter, at Billy Bones. You find me on Mastodon, the Fediverse, at Billy Bones, at NoAgendaSocial.com. Got a website, BillyBones.com. Remember, that is spelt with the number 3 instead of the letter E. And there you'll be able to find show notes, such as the link to this book and a link that says Value for Value. I put this show out free, no paywalls, no advertisers, in hope that you find value out of it. And I hope you did, because if you did, the first thing that I ask that you do in your means, your way of showing value, is to give this show a share. Again, maybe someone gets a talking point, an idea started within their own heads. But if you feel that this show is worth a monetary amount of money, doesn't have to be a whole lot. It can be a whole lot. That number's up to you. What is it worth to you? this month, or today at least, Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley comes in with his $15 donation, monthly donation. Thank you very much, sir. Glad you're finding value out of this still yet. But otherwise, I accept Satoshis if you're using a new podcast app. Little teeny tiny bits of Bitcoin. And this show's over. I love you guys. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll talk to you next week.